Good day, and welcome to episode 19 of the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour. I'm James Gordon, and I'm part of the team behind a weekly community gathering focused on raising awareness and sharing ideas about important issues that concern residents of Guelph and beyond. This week, our special guest is Arlene Slocum, Executive Director of the Wellington Water Watchers. They've been very effective advocates for water issues for more than 10 years now. Arlene, who has been with this great organization since the beginning and who is herself a tireless water champion, updates us on the ongoing issues with Nestlé Waters Canada and other current initiatives. Arlene had to leave the meeting early, so the last part of our program is a departure for us, music. I've got some tunes to spin from a musical theater work I wrote a few years ago about Nestlé called Nasté Business. You'll hear the original cast perform. Gabrielle Sundar Singh, who some of you will know from her regular role on the CBC show Kim's Convenience and for her work at the Shaw Festival. We've got local singer-songwriter Jenix and Guelph poet and activist Kevin Sutton, with a little bit of me in there, wrapping things up with a little song called Nasté Business, because the whole water bottling issue is pretty nasty. Hope you enjoy. Our moderator is Dustin Brown. Take it away.
Okay, awesome. Well, welcome everybody to the October 29th edition of the Breezy Breakfast. We are joined today by the Executive Director of Wellington Water Watchers, Arlene Slocum. Happy to have her here. Before we go into anything, I'm just going to do a land acknowledgement. So, we're broadcasting again today from territory that's covered by the Dish with One Spoon Covenant, and also treaty land and territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit, which is covered under the Between the Lakes Purchase, or Treaty 3. This is also the former residents of the Ottawandaren people, also called the Neutrals, of whom there are now no self-identifying members. The Dish with One Spoon Covenant and Treaty 3 have not been held and or constructed in good faith, which among other things has resulted in the gradual displacement of the Mississaugas from this territory to where many of them currently reside near Hagersville, Ontario, which is about a 40-minute drive away from here. Still at present, this land continues to be home to many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have come here either voluntarily or as a result of colonial displacement. Indigenous people here and elsewhere continue to resist and resurge and build a future in which they are not discriminated against by settler systems and where rightful jurisdiction of the land is recognized. And I should say, especially today, where rightful jurisdiction of the water is recognized. I'll ask people to particularly pay attention to the ongoing conflict between settler systems and Mi'kmaq fishers between the town of Caledonia and people of Six Nations at 1492 Lambeck Lane and other ongoing injustices that the settler system has a part to play in. So that's it for that. I'm just going to go straight into asking Arlene to come in and talk about what's been going on with Wellington Water Watchers. So Arlene, you have a couple of really exciting campaigns going on, as always. If you would like to just tell us a bit about a few of those to start us off, that would be awesome.
Sure. Thanks, Dustin. And can you just remind me, too, of kind of the timeline, just so I can keep my eye on it?
Sure. So, yeah, if you want to, you can just give us a 5-10 minute intro, and then we've got a few questions for you, and we'll get questions in from the audience as well, and that should take us pretty cleanly up to 8:45 when you have to leave.
Okay, excellent, thank you. Lovely to see you all online in these bizarre ways that we're connecting these days. So I've been with Wellington Water Watchers back from the original days, back when James and was around that kitchen table also. I guess that is 13, almost 14 years ago now. And Yeah, I was thinking, just as you were saying that land acknowledgement, I was really finding myself thinking about dish with one spoon territory, and that the obligations, you know, as treaty people that we have to within that covenant right there. And you know, it's such a beautiful, there's so much beautiful imagery in dish with one spoon. And, you know, the image, the idea that there's like, there's enough here for all of us and for all of life, and that, you know, we should only take what we need, and we should leave, not take more than what we need, and that we should leave the dish clean, when not pollute it, not fill it with our garbage and trash, and that we need to share it all, like all the way around. And, you know, at Water Watchers, we have many campaigns that we work on, but I think one of them that's like one of the most, has the largest affront to that, those kinds of treaty obligations, is the issue with Nestle Waters Canada, which is our very large campaign that most people know us by. Right now, it's kind of an exciting time, because it feels that after these 13, 14 years of putting some pressure on, we're seeing some reaction and movement. And we've seen bits and pieces along the way, but we're at a point in time where all across North America, Nestle Waters is considering and packaging up their bottling operations, particularly the ones that have been very troublesome, like our one here, the one that's just located in Aberfoyle. And they're selling them off. And in part, they're recognizing that sales are lower in these areas. But I think it's also just a move because, you know, we're calling it our Troubled Waters campaign, because there's a lot of, they have to deal with a lot of, you know, trouble. and thinking about the way that like a multinational corporation can think that it's okay to come into treaty lands and take much more than what they need, package it in terrible, wasteful little plastic bottles that are definitely not keeping the dish clean, filling it full of garbage. And not to mention, you know, doing so on lands that, you know, don't belong to them, to us, that belong to creation and the stewards and the guardians of the original stewards and guardians, both the Mississauga and the Haudenosaunee people, are living with boiled water advisories just a little bit south of us. It's an affront in so very many ways. So right now, we joined together with a bunch of other folks, Story of Stuff, and a lot of other of the organizers in the campaigns across North America that are opposing Nestle in their own little grassroots region. And we've calling this campaign, as I said, Troubled Waters, and have written a letter to Nestle execs and to the potential executives of companies that we have understood are, you know, potential purchasers for that, just saying, you know, this trouble is not going to go away just because it's sold to somebody else. This trouble will still be here. And also that, you know, there's an obligation after how, you know, 20 plus years here that Nestle's been extracting water from this region. There's an obligation, if they really want to stay true to their environmental values that's on their website, which I believe to be a farce. But if they wanted to be true to that, then the way that they could actually make some kind of amends is to return those wells, just to gift them back. And in different jurisdictions, it's looking like different things. But we're suggesting, because in 2017, I think it was, the youth council and elders from the Haudenosaunee Confederacy Council organized a protest at the driveway of Nestle and handed them a cease and desist order that was had the blessing of their council on it. And they believe that that well and the rights around that should be returned to Haudenosaunee people. And so this is an ask that we've had, and we're putting it out there, and it's getting a bit of media attention. We aren't for the moment imagining that Nestle is probably going to make that gesture, but the intention about this campaign is just to apply a lot more pressure, certainly to any prospective buyers. And also there's an additional ask in it to say that it's possibly the appropriate time for the provincial government to step in and like step in and honor reconciliation and treaty agreements and take a role in this. So it's kind of I found it really cheeky and kind of fun and funny in our activism that can be long and, you know, tiresome. Sometimes it's fun. It's really important to have some fun and celebrate our wins and, you know, be a little cheeky. And so that's that campaign that I wanted to share a little bit about with you. And the other thing, a couple other things that I wanted to mention. Another one was that in recent years, we've been, and I guess very more recently, just on September 26th, we hosted an event called Watershed 2020. And that's going to be the beginning of an annual cycle of these events, Watershed events. And the intention specifically behind those are to really drive the conversation about towards a water justice future and towards a water justice agenda. And what does that look like? And to start those conversations about, you know, typically in the environmental movement and the water advocacy movement is no different. It's composed primarily of, you know, middle to upper class settler folks. And it's not representing a lot of voices around the table. And it's certainly not embracing as of yet, like solidarity and promoting Indigenous sovereignty. And so our event on the 26th of September really solidified that for us. We had some beautiful speakers, and the whole tone of it was about, you know, what is it that we need to do as water protectors if we want to really truly call ourselves water protectors? How do we step into that work in a good way? And from my point of view, we were given two very, very clear directives. And that is that we personally, each one of us, needs to find ways to deepen our personal relationship with water. And that from that, from that deepening of relationship, a lot more will flow in us about the right ways to be with water and to advocate for water. And the second directive very clearly pointed out to us was to center Indigenous voices in water advocacy. And we see, you know, we see across the globe that often it's Indigenous people who are standing and putting their bodies on the line to protect the earth and to protect water. And, you know, some friend of mine yesterday was mentioning to me, isn't it just interesting that at least here in this country, and probably the situations happen globally, but that here in this country, in so many reservations where there are boiled water advisories, it's still the Indigenous people that are putting their bodies on the line to protect water. And it's time that we step into some of that work as well, and to center and uplift their voices. I guess lastly, I just wanted to say too that held and dear in that covenant, Dish with One Spoon Covenant Treaty, is again the notion of, you know, only working within our means, like that everything, that there is enough here for everything that we need. And in thinking about the way that the city is proposing its growth plans, it's a really good time to think about that and to imagine what that actually means. And what does it mean to be able to live within our means right here? Like, what is our capacity for water, and how do we live within those really defined boundaries to make sure that, yeah, we're not taking from beyond, and that we are, you know, being responsible stewards of this resource. So I think maybe I've talked for a little while, and maybe I'll pause there in case there are some questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to actually just ask a quick follow-up question on the Troubled Waters campaign. So as I understand, this is a kind of a coalition-based campaign where across North America, you are advocating that any bottling facility, before it's sold to another private entity, it's given back to the public in some way, shape, or form. So what has Nestle's response been to that thus far to you? Or to the media?
So we've had no response to us. And I have not heard if Story of Stuff and any of the other organizers have heard anything. We've not heard back. But in media clips, they've been connecting with Andrea and Simard. She's the hydrologist that they have, the water engineer and their spokesperson. And all that I've seen in her quotes reference that they are good stewards of the water, and that they are good community members, and that they support the communities that they're in and will make the best choices that way. And it's been, that's sort of stock answers that we've heard for years and years. And, you know, so essentially no response, but I'm very interested to hear what's going on in their backroom conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I looked at the quote from Adrienne Simard as well. And she was, I think she told the Wellington Advertiser, quote, "Our shared commitment to the sustainability of water resources is grounded in science and guides our everyday decisions and actions." I was wondering if maybe you could speak on what it means in this scenario to be grounded in science, and how maybe that can't take us all the way towards water protection.
Yeah, so that's a good question. And, you know, it is Nestle, by as part of their permit obligations, have an awful lot of watering have a lot of monitoring wells around each of their extraction points. And the monitoring wells are to assess any changes to the baseline water data that they've collected. And so they have an awful lot of data that's collected over all the various years. And of course, you know, if you look within a particularly narrow frame of reference, which is what we are suggesting happening with those wells, it's not showing an immediate problem. There's a couple problems with that, though. It's a fairly narrow frame of reference. It's not taking into account other factors that we are, you know, immediately facing, and certainly will become increasingly important over the coming years, such as impacts of climate change and how that's going to factor into the sustainability of our water. None of that is in the modeling that they're currently using. And, you know, so they're within a very small range. I think that they can safely say that their data is showing no ill results. However, once their data starts to show poor results, it's like, it's too late. It's like, that's when it's too late. So it's not a, you know, one of the statement of values in the Ministry of Environment and Parks and Recreation is the precautionary principle. And that is like to make sure that that you're being proactive about not doing harm, rather than, you know, trying to get the horses back in the barn when the gates open. Like it's not a very sensible or specific way to approach water extraction. And secondly, oh, there was another point I was going to say there. I know what I was going to say, that we anecdotally have heard all through the years about residents nearby some of their wellheads that have noticed a significant drawdown in either their wells or their ponds. And when it comes to a situation like that, those individuals are kind of left without much they're able to do, because in order for them to have any kind of restitution from the company, they need to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's specifically Nestle water taking that's impacting them, which is really challenging to do, you know, and requires deep pockets and not something that everybody has access to. So there's so many problems around the way that she can and they can safely say they're standing behind their science, because I just think it's a narrow range that they're referencing.
Sure. I'll add kind of my favorite proverb about engineering as well. I'll try to translate it because I heard it in one version, but I'll put it in a water version, which is anybody can come up with a plan to protect water long term if they really sit down and try. And, you know, the answer to that is easy. It's don't pollute it. Use the precautionary principle. You know, use prevention over high-tech treatment facilities, et cetera, et cetera. But it takes a water engineer or a water scientist to barely protect water, to keep teetering on the edge. And I think that's important to keep in mind with answers like that from companies like Nestle. So we have some questions in the chat. Mandy wants you to, if you can, just elaborate on what happened with Nestle's attempted sale to Ice River Springs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so we do not really know what happened there. So Ice River Springs poses themselves as a sort of mom and pop operation. They have a bottling operation near Feversham, I think it's called, like up near Creemore. But they also have another operation out in BC, and I think there's another one that I'm not recalling at the moment. But they are a large company. That's no doubt about it. And they had a conditional offer in on the Nestle. We're calling it the Aberfoyle complex, so the three wellhead areas in this area. And it is not clear to us. There's a number of things within that conditional sale that were not clear to us because they're a private part of the conditions. But we have noticed that in other parts in the world, when Nestle is having struggles or challenges around one of their bottling operations, they'll do this thing where they sell to another company, and ideally like a local mom and pop operation, but they retain shares and stakes, or they sometimes even retain the name of the brand. And so they're still, it's sort of just like a facade. There's just another company coming in, but they're still a predominant stakeholder. And we're not sure if that was the situation with Ice River Springs or not. But in recent months, the issue came up again about extending the moratorium, which essentially takes the Middlebrook well out of the potential for those three wellheads, because it isn't a functioning well yet. Middlebrook's by Elora, for those who don't know. And the Middlebrook well is the third well that Nestle has purchased in this area and is vying to get a water permit for. And because of a lot of activism, has not been successful in that. We've managed to have moratoriums be extended and extended. And that moratorium got bumped again. And it seemed right then when Ice Rivers declined or stepped back from the offer. So we're not sure if it's related to that, but it seems to me that it very well could be, because the potentials of, we've been hearing over the years that the Aberfoyle well is kind of, it's needing to find outlying wells to keep it sustainable. And without the Middlebrook well online, perhaps it's not. And so that's what we figured. It's probably just too much trouble for them to hang on and wait through the next stretches of moratoriums.
Okay, thanks. So we have a few more questions that have come into the chat. And I think first I'm just going to ask you to talk about the moratorium a little bit more and kind of where it's sitting and whether renewals are coming up.
Okay, so interestingly, I'm going to try to remember these dates accurately. I think it was 2016 when the moratoriums were first put in place on the moratorium was put in place on any new permits for water bottling purposes in the province. And that happened, I believe, because we were making a lot of noise, and Save Our Water up in Elora was making a lot of noise and stink about that particular well there. At that time, Centre Wellington was doing a lot of their own feasibility studies and groundwater studies, and had defined that, you know, within their requirements to grow, that the water from the well is actually, from the Middlebrook well, is actually needed to meet their growth targets. And so they as well, the council as well, was, you know, over time and taking some convincing, but had noted that they were not a willing host to having Nestle Waters Canada in there. So we were able to get a moratorium placed that was going to be for, I'm trying to remember the first stretch of time, I think it was for a year, while they were going to be doing all the rest of their monitoring science and data and their tier three water budget in the area. And while that was happening, they also just, both the Nestle well was up for renewal for their permit. They have a cycle of 5 years for when their permits are allowed. And then there has to be a new posting where people can make comments and their permit renewal was up in 2016. And something linked with, while they were doing further groundwater studies around the moratorium, they were also, they meaning the provincial government, and at the time it was the Liberal government, were doing studies into understanding more about the impacts of water bottling and the regulations, and they were reviewing all of those regulations and rules. So while that was happening, they granted extensions to Nestle on the Aberfoyle well. In 2017, was the expiry date of the Hillsburg well, which is their other well that's in this complex. And that one was also granted an extension. And during this time when we've been pushing the moratorium out, each one of their extent, each one of those permits have just been continued to be granted an extension, which is kind of interesting now because here we are in 2020 and that was in 2016. So they've operated for 4 years without a renewed public comment on their water permits. And that's been sort of a loophole that we haven't been able to get around. But then they proposed their new regulations and that was up for a comment period. And then just very recently, they've proposed the results of their, you know, digesting the comments that came in and the regulations that are there. And right now we're in another term where there was another extension granted on the moratorium, which means indefinite extensions on the permits for both Hillsburg and Aberfoyle. And right now there's another open comment period that's about one of the regulations that they've added, which we think is a good one, and they've actually bumped it up to being like, it's a little bit more than a regulation change. It's like actually a legislative piece that's coming in around it. And it's that councils have to be a willing host. They have to be consulted and they have to agree to being a host to a water bottler coming in. And that's a really good step in the right direction. However, the amount of water that they're saying triggers that is far too high in our estimation. So it's identified as if a water taker wants to take 379,000 liters, then that's when it triggers the right for the council to say yes or no. And we believe that should be significantly lower. We believe that actually council should have the right to be a willing host to any permit to take water in their vicinity, given like growth targets that are, you know, pending and that are certainly a topic of conversation these days. So whether that's aggregate or water bottling, we believe that regardless of the amount of water, if it's going to require a permit to take water, which usually is triggered at 50,000 liters a day, that the community and the council needs to be a willing host if they want to take that on. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I have a quick follow-up, which is in our situation with the Aberfoyle facility, which council would that apply to?
So, yeah, that's another really great question. And I think, like, specifically, that's in Puslinch Township. So it would most likely have to be Puslinch that would have to agree. But because, as you all, I think, have been discussing here, in a staff report some years ago, around that was a part of the comment period on a past permit renewal, the staff report mentioned that somewhere approaching 2020 would be the time when the city's water needs might come and bump up against the needs of Nestle. And if the city was, you know, looking beyond our borders for some more wells and some more groundwater to service the growing community, that it feels that the city of Guelph would have to have a say in that too. But that's a really good question, and I don't know how they've defined that jurisdiction.
Okay, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and what can be done locally here. Now, I know, James, you had a question from earlier and you wanted to comment on this as well. So the floor is yours.
Yeah. Thanks, Dustin, and thanks, Arlene. Just about what we were talking about right now, I'll just, as a context, Arlene and I have been communicating about the changes suggested by Bill 123 in the Ontario Water Resources Act. I think I've got so cynical about anything that comes from both the water bottling industry and from the provincial government that I have a concern, although you recognize as an opportunity. I'll just read what they're proposing from the Act. Arlene, you paraphrased it, that they recommend an amendment to require certain persons who wish to apply for a permit to take groundwater for the purpose of producing bottled water to first seek the support of the council of the local municipality where the water will be taken. So just in what you were saying to Dustin, there's a risk there, and it, the opportunity is that some place like Guelph would say, yep, we don't want that here, and that would pass law. However, there would be willing hosts like Push Lynch that you'd think would be easier for water bottlers to find. Okay, and Nestle is a very powerful corporation. They wave these carrots about jobs and prosperity where they put their plants. So I worry that we come, let's just pass the buck around to a community that wants to take it. I don't know if you have a comment about that or not.
Yeah, James, and that's like a real potential issue, because as we know, that's part of the playbook that Nestle has. They go into small rural communities. That's specifically what they do. And of course, there's a risk there. The opportunity, though, is that, these days, this is a very big issue, water bottling. And although the council itself might be a willing host, it's an opportunity to rally citizens and have them apply pressure to their councils to make them not a willing host. And an example of that, I think, is really well seen in Center Wellington, because there was a moment there where the council was happy to have Nestle sign on, even though they understood that they were bumping up against their own water needs. And at one point, the council was also willing to it was almost proposed like a public-private sharing that would be with Nestle and the council. And it was only because of citizen action and an awful lot of pressure from citizens that the council had to respond differently. And I think that within those opportunities is the activation of democracy too, So all of those folks who are activated around that water issue are now activated and paying attention in a way that will hold their counselors accountable.
Right. Let's hope. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. So Arlene, let's get to the questions from the chat then. Susan wanted to know if you had any comments on Clare Maltby, as we know that's a sensitive groundwater recharge area with moraines that are very unique geological features, hydrogeological features, I should say. Any thoughts on the city's plan to develop in the South End?
Yeah, so what I can say on that is we've definitely been campaign support to the to that group and to that really good work. And it's absolutely essential to be thinking about like the last green space, and certainly the hillocky, the drumlins and the parts of the moraine that are existing in Clare Maltby as it's being developed, it has to be done wisely. I myself can't speak too many details about it, because it's not been one that I've been really involved in. And I'm sure that Susan, you could speak to a great deal more of it than I can, but we absolutely support the Protect Our, what do you guys call yourself? Protect Our Water. We have another campaign right now called Protect Our Waterways. And I
Protect
sometimes-
Protect Our Moraine.
Protect Our Moraine, of course. Yeah. And we certainly, applauded Mike Schreiner's bill to try to be involved in protecting the Greater Moraine, which I know wouldn't have it. This is a jurisdictionally a little bit different, but it's essential that we start thinking about, people have been thinking about it for a long time, but that development happens wisely, and that in those last stretches that it happens particularly wisely.
Great, Susan Watson, did you have any follow-ups there on Clare Maltby?
I guess on some levels, I just feel it's complete insanity that we are developing it at all. And I'm really concerned about how the science is happening. I think that some parts of Clare Maltby are actually part of the Mill Creek watershed, and that the city was in fact looking at opening another well quite far out in 2041, that we would need clean water from Clare Maltby. And it really lines up with what Dustin is saying. I think all the science around Clare Maltby is how not to truly wreck it, to just put it on that line. When they talk about sustainability, it's how much can we impact it without going over the line, not about protecting it. But I'm concerned about how the science is being done. A lot of the developers are not letting independent scientists onto their properties. They're providing data to the city. So I'm really concerned about the independence of the science that's underlying it. And to me, it just seems like insanity that we're sailing into drought, we're sailing into the really severe impacts of climate change, and we're going to be building on top of a glacial moraine that filters groundwater. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just insanity, even with so-called protections in place. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yep. I'd agree with you that we need to, you know, it's insanity. And yet, like, I don't know. It's also, I don't know how we manage quote unquote growth needs with all these other pieces too. It's complex
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks, Arlene. Thanks, Susan. I have just a couple questions that maybe you can answer real quickly, Arlene, before we start to wrap up. So Diane and Charlie Chaplin were respectively wondering how strong are Kitchener-Waterloo and the Grand River Conservation Authority as partners in your activism work?
There's a very vibrant community in Kitchener-Waterloo of citizens that are you know, huge supporters of this work that we do. And, you know, interestingly, our reach and our supporter base, because these have been and certainly started off being really localized here in the Guelph area, but because this is a provincial, because water permits are provincially issued and regulated, that we have a supporter base that spans across the region of Ontario and, well, still pretty much South Central Ontario at this moment, but we have some supporters in more far-flung reaches. The other thing that I wanted to say around that is that within our Towards a Water Justice Agenda conversation, we are connecting in with more and more communities that are facing other issues that are related to the trouble that is happening around water. So all the extractive mining industries that are happening across the province, particularly up north. And you know, we're wanting to weigh in and be a voice on the insanity of the amount of boiled water advisories that are happening too. So the short answer is that strong, vibrant community in Kitchener-Waterloo. And in terms of the GRCA, often not a strong ally, quite contrary to what you might think. And in fact, again, one of the bits of science that Nestle likes to tout is that a water taking in this area, you'll often hear them say is 1% of all the water taking in the area. And that's like a bit of science that, you know, there the ways that one can skew statistics to make one's point. And although that is true when you just look across the board at the actual water taking permits that are issued, water taking permits come in a variety of different types of permits, and many of which are completely returning the water right back to the ground. So a permit might be required for, let's say, dewatering an aggregate base and the water, and not that we support this because we have a lot of campaigns that we work with that are opposing excessive aggregate extraction too, but those water permits often are taking the water out of the ground and putting them right back in. So, and that's a fair bulk of what the water permitting looks like. So to compare their 1% with a permit like that is like comparing apples and oranges. Theirs is a completely extractive and removing it from the watershed. And so GRCA have often touted that that's their opinion, that they're not a significant water taker. And so it's not on their radar, which is really bizarre.
Next question quickly from Diane Hurst. Diane and other people have kind of noticed some low water levels, whether that be in the reservoir or in the rivers close to downtown. Would this be classified as a drought year?
I'm not sure that, again, like I can officially speak to that. I think that like when we compare from some of the more recent years, like the previous years, where it was definitely a severe drought. This year we had a bit more water. However, there are ever increasing water taking permits on the rise. So it's now really hard to identify, as far as I can see, what the impacts are related to. And, you know, we had once, a year and a half ago, we had a guest speaker. His name was Dr. Trevor Dickinson, and he all of his data is related to the way that precipitation is falling and changing, and the way that recharge is changing over these years, and related to climate change. But it's also that more and more we are seeing in the winter time, we are not getting the big snow load that sits on the ground and then ends up in this big spring thaw, where there is like a very quick amount of water that's on the surface that finds its way to filling up reservoirs and lakes. What's happening these days with our milder winters is that the snowfall or rainfall events that happen through the winter are often not staying. They're melting or going back into the ground right away, rather than holding and sustaining. So the whole hydrology is shifting as we are moving into climate change, which is part of the reason why I think it's really hard to make sort of monitoring assessments or claims that Nestle is, because the whole thing is shifting and it's harder now to really identify from my perspective. You need a lot of science and a lot of data to really determine where those drought lines lie and what time of the year you're in. So I'm sorry, I can't answer that question very well right now. We hear anecdotally from folks who tell us about some of their wells that are experiencing drying up, and ponds that are drying up, and people who've lived in properties for 20 right now. So that's anecdotal. And yeah, I think it's just all shifting a great deal.
So Arlene, to start to close things off, you and your colleagues deal with a lot of what I would call heavy subject matter. Your work involves deteriorating water rights, privatization, the climate crisis, facing injustices towards indigenous rights as well. So with all of that work, all of that content that faces you on a regular basis, how do you maintain hope in your work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I might have started off with this too. We celebrate our wins wherever we get them. We take, you know, we really try to, you know, enjoy those and take moments to reflect on those, big or small. And, you know, we have a beautiful community of people doing this work, and I think we keep each other really buoyed and supported. And I think that on a really personal level, what I can say is that, As I work to deepen and develop more deeply my personal relationship with water and my practices around what that might look like, I feel intimately more connected with like the whole of creation, I suppose, but particularly with this beautiful Aramusa River that's right outside my window here. And you know, when I feel that kind of connection with her, I will call her, I realized that like the water's been here since the dawn of time, and it will be here till the dawn of time. And we just need to stay in the flow and work and move like water, move around obstacles, go over them where needed, go under them where needed, and just keep the flow going. And the flow is, I guess, where I find my hope and inspiration.
Fantastic. Thanks, Arlene. I know you have to go soon. So I'm just going to ask if people have follow-up questions, if they want to get in touch or get connected with any of your resources, where should they find you and the Wellington Water Watchers?
Yeah, you can send an email to info@wellingtonwaterwatchers.ca, and I'm the one that checks those. So I'd be happy to hear from you there.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thanks, Arlene. I hope you have a good rest of your day, and hope the kids get to school safely and everything else goes well this morning.
Thanks very much. Yeah.
Great. All right. We'll see you.
Bye, everyone. Yeah.
Let me get this straight. to be true. Oh, who would have thought that we could sell them something that they've already got? It's better than chocolate, this deal so sweet. It's gotta be the scam of the century. It's the very same water that comes from. To sell people something they don't need, selling baby formula in third world countries. They'll buy anything in a bottle, it seems. It's gotta be the scam of the century. Those millions of get this straight. Are you telling me we can take their water, they'll give it to us for free, and sell it back to them? How can this be? It's gotta be the scam of the century. It's gotta be the scam.
In the trees, a message floating on the breeze. I have dreams of rivers running dry, dreams that make me want to cry. I heard the Nasty Company is threatening our community. They want to drill more wells, they want to take more water, threatening the future of our sons and daughters. But I had a vision like Joan of Arc, like a bolt of lightning in the dark, that together as one we would rise and make our leaders realize that you can't put a price on the source of life. You can't put a price on the source of life. My dear fellow activists, I need your help. Let's raise our fists in unity with impunity, with a golden opportunity to show that our community is strong. There's a town meeting tomorrow night. Let's go there and demonstrate our rights. Let's fight with our goal in all our sights that bottling water is wrong. That water shouldn't be a commodity. It belongs to us. It's pure and free. That permit that Nasty needs to take it has to be turned down. We've got to make it clear to our leaders, clear to everyone, that this is a cause that's got to be one, that keeping our watershed sustainable is a dream that will not be attainable unless we keep corporations out. Come on, good guys, let's all shout. Water, it's ours, you can't have it. Don't let Nasty come and grab it. Water, it's ours, you can't have it. Don't let Nasty come and grab it. Let's keep its purity, its security. We need water as a surety. If it's not there, neither are we. If it's not there, neither are we. This is an issue about a philosophy, a basic choice for you and me. Do we let corporations have what's ours? Do we let them have those kinds of powers so they can control the distribution? We have to say no, and here's the solution. We can't let them get that permit. Make our leaders take it and burn it. Water, it's ours, you can't have it. Don't let Nasty come and grab it. Water, it's ours, you can't have it. Don't let Nasty come and grab it. Who will join me in this cause? Show your support with your applause.
Water is sacred, water is holy. We were created in its life-giving flow. Earth's first living spirit, it's in our soul. We know it's why we're here, that's why we love it so. Water is sacred, water is holy.
Water is sacred,
and it's water
is holy.
It's where we're created,
and it's life
in our soul.
In our spirit,
that's what
it's in our soul.
We know it's why we're
sacred,
that's why
water is holy,
it's where
we were created,
and
it's
life in our soul.
We know it's where we're
spirit, that's why
it's in our soul.
We know it's why we're here,
that's why we love it so.
As your big corporate buddy, you blame us for what we're making, but you're the ones who are taking what we offer. I'd say the blame game's a little muddy. Very clear, who's the bad guy here? If you keep buying what we sell, it gets a little hard to tell which of us keeps the system perpetuated that breeds this culture of consumers. Driven by the baby boomers. If we're a monster, we're one you created. Who's the bad guy here? Who's the bad guy here? It's not very clear. the ones who made us who we are. Made us multinational stars. We owe you our gratitude, but we don't need the attitude. Say what you want, but we're in this together. Who's the bad guy here? Who's the bad guy here? It's not very clear. Who's the bad guy here? It's not very clear.
Get out of our way. Nasty business. Go on now, run and play. Nasty business. Get away from here. Nasty business. Do I make myself clear? Things might get a little rough. Better get going when the going gets tough. Better start running. I hear your mama call. This is nasty business, that's all.
Ran out of time again, that's all. Thanks as always to our guests and to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Alt, Dustin Brown, Tanya Gavert, Hina Mystery, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us in one of our live Zoom sessions, or you have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. If you'd like to support the work that we do on this program, please visit patreon.com and look for Breezy Bullhorn. Thank you for any support you can lend, and as always, for listening.